Yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. Once again, I am Martin. I'm joined by the King of the Casters, Mr. Brett Podcast. And Brett, we have one of our favorite guests back today.
That's right. One of our favorite guests, one of our favorite guitar players. They go hand in hand. We have Gus G back, and he is going to talk about Quantum Leap coming out on October 8th. But, you know, Gus, how are you first off?
Hey, guys. I'm doing fine. Hope you guys are doing well. How are you?
Well, we're fantastic. I know that. But normally, I want to jump right into the album. But in this case, I actually want to jump right into the Fierce music video, because I want to thank you for doing that, because it made me laugh a lot.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. That was the intention, to make people laugh. For the video, not for the music, hopefully.
that's right. No, tell me how all of that came about, because just story is funny. It's one of my favorite videos of all time.
Wow, thank you. Well, where do I begin with that? I think somewhere during that second lockdown that we had here in Greece, I started losing my mind, I guess. That's why I came up with this idea, and I had too much time on my hands, too much free time on my hands. So I started experimenting with corpse paint makeup. I was watching these movies. I watch a lot of movies, like everybody did, and all these TV series and stuff. And some of the movies that I watched, one of them was called Lords of Chaos. I don't know if you guys have seen that movie, but it's...
Yeah, isn't that Rob Zombie?
No, that's...
I have seen it. It's on Shudder. Sorry, I have seen it.
That's by a Swedish director, Jonas Åkerlund, and it's about the story of Mayhem, the black metal band from Norway. And about Euronymous. And anyway, so it's a great movie. And then I was watching another like Icelandic movie called Metalhead, about this depressed girl that she kind of like, you know, found a gateway, you know, through music. And she formed a black metal band and started wearing corpse paint at home and stuff. So, I was like, well, I might as well do that here as well. And I came up with this idea of doing a music video because I had just finished the album, and I thought, well, I want to make a home video, like, you know, instead of like the good old like performance clip, you know, at some location that I've done a million times before. It would have been nice to do like a homemade video, and I call up the guy that I work with, you know, the director Panos, and I said to him, look, I have this crazy idea that, you know, a lonely rock star at home being grumpy cat. And, at some point he finds true love, you know, with this girl that he's keeping a prisoner in his dungeon or something, you know. And eventually, you know, she tries to run away, but then I came up with this silly script, but it's a love story, but, you know, through a humoristic view, I would say, aspect. On top of that, I put makeup on, corpse paint makeup on, and, you know, the girl is played by my wife, and she was in full corpse paint makeup as well. So there you have it. You know, there were some, as you can imagine, we had a fun day shooting this at home. It was great.
Just the two of you that shot it together?
The director,
and
of course.
The director, yeah.
Yeah, he shot all this then. But, you know, I'm proud to say that I came up with a script with, with a whole concept. And, you know, I did my own makeup and, of course, the wardrobe and everything. And I brought my own cats. So, yeah.
All right. Well, Lords of Chaos. I was thinking House of Salem. See, that, I told you I wasn't that close.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not even
close.
Yeah.
I've seen that one. That's a good movie, too. Yeah. It's different.
Yeah. You also brought your own awards, of course, which is what made your... made your wife fall back in love with you.
Well, that's the thing, you know, she fell in love with a rock star, you know, as soon as she sees that, okay, this guy has awards and stuff, she falls in love, and then they end up forming a band together. it's just silly. But and then of course there's a plot twist in the end, because he's kind of, you know, I wake up like kind of, you know, in shock, like, wow, what a crazy nightmare that was. But is it a nightmare, you know, because as you see at the end, or maybe I shouldn't say that, people can just go and watch that on YouTube.
That's right, and they need to watch it, they truly do. Now, yeah, yeah. Is that what yeah. made your wife fall in love with you in the first place, was your rock stardom?
Yes, of course, yeah, yeah. I remember she came to my house and I showed her all the posters that, you know, they had of me and the Japanese magazines, and she was like, yep, you're the one.
That orange hat looks massive, by the way. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Well, well, he was not supposed to be like that. He was skinnier, but the thing is, that cat, you know, the orange cat, his name is Leon, and he eats his food, but he eats the other, we have three cats. He eats the other two cats' food as well. So
it's kind of like me when I'm with Brett. I eat his food too.
His food.
Yeah, it's okay. Leon just has COVID weight. That's what I'm calling it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, everybody. You know, we all gained a few pounds during lockdown. So did he.
All right. So let's actually talk about the album Quantum Leap.
I thought we were doing that all this time. That video is part of Quantum Leap.
For sure, it is. But now we'll talk about the actual music on the album, and not just the awesome stuff that goes with it. We have an all No Voices album here from you. What was the impetus behind doing entirely instrumental?
You know, it's been something I've been thinking about for a while now, but I never had really the time to sit down and think what that project might be and what that would be like. And, I think when, the pandemic first came and all my tours got canceled and everything, and when all that happened, I was like, well, maybe now is the time to sit down and do this properly. And, I probably won't be seeing anybody, any of my friends, you know, musicians or whatever, bandmates. I'm not going to be seeing them for a year. So I just sat there, you know, like at home and in my home studio. And I just started putting, you know, some new ideas down and all that, and went through some of the old ideas. And I think it's by summer 2020, I kind of made a decision like, well, I think I got enough material to start developing this, you know, into a proper production. And, I'll just go for it. You know, I just seen that the timing was right. Yeah. So I knew that I wouldn't get distracted by any touring that would come up or anything like that. So So it was fun. You know, it was fun. It really kept my mind off all the negative stuff that was happening.
It seems to me like the success, the key when you're doing one of these albums that's all instrumental, is you take a song, you put it in one direction, then you got to give it a twist or two or three, because you don't have the safety net of the vocals to fall back on. You got to keep the listener's attention. And I think that's one of the things you did extremely well.
Wow, thank you. Yeah, because that was also a thing that I was wondering about myself. Like, well, how do you fill the gap, but the kind of space that the vocals occupy? You know, you have to, like you said, you have to make it interesting. But what is interesting? Is interesting, does interesting mean that you have to shred too much or just play too much, too many solos? To me, that wasn't the case, you know. So there's so many ways that you can do that. You know, you can play, you can come up with melodies or new themes, or just be more adventurous with the arrangements, or just add layers of whatever, you know, like sounds. And so that's what I found really interesting. And it was a challenge for me, because like I said, I hadn't done that before. I mean, I've done instrumental songs, but not like as a full on project like that. Yeah.
Well, and I think that's the thing. Like, I was actually a little surprised when I started listening and then got up, because like you say, it is actual songs. Like, these are songs that you, I would imagine, could have like a singer going over top of it, whereas so often, you know, with the No Voices instrumental stuff, you do just hear, you know, in some cases, a lot of wanking and that kind of thing. So
yep.
It's nice that you kind of did peel that back. And I know, too, just in the write-up for the album that we got to listen to, I mean, it talks about you having to kind of go back in and peel stuff out because you found that you were maybe overplaying a little bit.
I did, yeah. I did that on a couple of songs. And, you know, it's easy to fall into that trap, I guess, of just adding too many parts and too many things. And I mean, that's okay if that's just what you're supposed to say with that, if that's your statement. But I remember when that was happening on a couple of songs, I was not happy because, you know, I wake up every, you know, whenever I finish my work, my studio, you know, then I'll listen back like maybe a couple of days later and see how I feel about it. And there were a few songs that I was listening to and was like, well, this isn't going anywhere. They're like, this isn't saying anything. So, and I realized at the end that, you know, you need the big melodies. You definitely need that. You need to have that hook, you know, even though there's no vocals there, you need to, you know, replace that with guitar. Guitar becomes a voice, you know, so, or keyboards or whatever, you know, like just, you know, you have to create that thing now. So, and in the end, that was a solution to my issue, you know, there. So I think once I started, you know, bringing in more melodies to the whole thing, you know, everything just became, it just, everything opened up, you know. So you can have all the technical riffs or arpeggios or whatever you have, but, you know, once you have those big melodies, that the song takes form, you know.
Well, and I think, too, that this kind of, you know, goes in a lot more directions than I think maybe you're used to in some of your older albums. Like, I mean, you do have like the ballad, you got a lot of the bluesy stuff, you got a lot of just a lot of different sounds and textures. Was that intentional?
Yeah, I guess so. You can say that because that's the time for me to get to experiment, I guess. But like, I couldn't do a synthwave track like Night Driver. I can't do stuff like that with Firewind, you know, that would be stupid. yeah. It would make no sense, absolutely. But, you know, with a solo record, you can do that. You can, and you know, I had some other ideas that didn't end up on the record. Like, I had a song that was a bit more Latin and all that stuff, but, you know, I just didn't end up finish it on time. And but, you know, it's like, this is the time for me to just experiment and branch out and play something more bluesy and then get back to the metal stuff and then maybe, you know, make an electronic track or whatever, like, or whatever, basically, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's, you know, like I said, the guitar is a voice. So once you have that there, that's the main ingredient. And that glues everything together.
Is that the kind of thing that you do then? Do you practice, you know, Latin guitar? Do you practice playing like different styles? Or like, how much do you practice?
Well, I mean, I definitely don't practice Latin stuff. I don't know how to play that, but I can fake it, you know, like I can do like a couple of fake jazz licks or whatever. I mean, I enjoy listening to all kinds of music, but it doesn't mean that I can play it. But, you know, I have a good enough ear to pick up on things and I can play stuff on the spot, but I'm not really educated. And you know, my main thing is hard rock and metal, you know, so that's what I do best. I love blues rock and stuff, but you know, I like to you know, that this is like a platform for me to just branch out, basically, you know. To answer the other question, that yeah, I do still practice, not as much as I would like to, but I sit down every now and then and I play guitar and I practice, and you know, playing and practicing is two different things, and I keep saying that whenever I do clinics or lessons, or even on some of my YouTube videos, like it's, you know, playing is just noodling around, you know, so I just pick up the guitar and sing on my couch and I'm just playing. That's a different thing. That's not practicing. Practicing is when you sit down and actually focus on what you're going to practice and put in the time, and, you know, it's like a workout, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's two different things, you know, playing or noodling around, you know, because a lot of guitar players, they say, well, I play 3 hours a day, but, you know, I haven't seen any progress for like 2 years. Yeah, because you're not practicing. You know, practicing is basically sitting down with a metronome, sitting down with a metronome and, you know, going over and over, like repetition, you know, building muscle memory and all that stuff. So that can be a bit boring, but you can see results that way.
Now, we've heard stories from other guitarists about how they'll have guitars pretty much in every room of the house. Is that kind of similar for you, or do you kind of have one room that you, your studio, where you keep most everything?
I used to have guitars and amps all over the house, but since you saw, like, the video that we filmed, Fears, that was the old house. Since then, we moved to a new place, and now I took a whole floor to myself now. So now I have this big space where it's just like this big man cave and everything is in there. So, you know, all my guitars, all my amps, like all the storage stuff that I have, like all the guitar cases, all my cables, all my shit is in there. And, you know, and upstairs is just like the living space. So my wife doesn't have to see all my stuff left and right. So I think now I'm a little bit more organized.
How many guitars?
Well, I also understand. Go ahead, Brett.
I was just going to ask how many guitars you have.
Not that many. I mean, I don't have as many as other guys. You know, I haven't counted, but probably about 40 or 50 by now. Yeah.
Oh, hardly anything then.
It's a lot, but it's, I mean, come on, I know guys that are, they have like 150 guitars or something, so yeah.
So I understand you have a rock vault of riffs. That's what, how they described it in the promo material that we got. So how many riffs did you go through before you found the ones that, you know, made up this album?
I really don't remember. I mean, I don't have like endless, you know, riff ideas. I have a few, like, I don't know, maybe like I have 10 or 20, something like that, always laying around. It's just enough to just kickstart like a new project or whatever. Like I'll go through them and then I'll just decide what I like right there on the spot. And if something feels like, okay, maybe I can work on this now. And that'll usually be like the initial kind of the starting point of, and maybe that'll give me a direction. Sometimes that's false too. You know, it won't give me direction. It'll just give me something to work on and get warmed up. And then I'll jump in a new idea and then I'll start. So it really depends. Really depends.
And then with these riffs, like, do you ever find yourself thinking, oh, this would sound better with Firewind, so I'm going to, like, stash that for later, and, oh, this one I could work on for a solo album?
Yeah, I mean, usually I'll say that to myself, and I'll be like, yeah, that's the next Firewind. And then so many times what happens is that those ideas that were meant to be for Firewind will end up on a solo record and vice versa. Like, this sounds really modern. That should be on my next solo record. And then that ends up being, like, on a power metal record for Firewind. and it's not so modern after all. So, but, you know, it depends, really. You know, it depends who I'm writing with and what kind of, because, like, if I go in, like, I co-write a lot of stuff with Dennis Ward, and like, I'll send him a bunch of riffs, and he'll also pick and choose some stuff that he likes or where he feels he can contribute some vocal melodies. And I mean, we've worked on stuff that I thought were going to be, like, I send him something for my solo record and or I didn't have enough material and I just threw something at him that I was, you know, it was destined to be on a solo record, and then that became like a Firewind song. And that stuff happens all the time. I don't know. It depends, you know. It depends really at the moment and what kind of ideas that I have laying around. Yeah.
One of the things I really wanted to know, just because the promo copy we got, track number 3 was called Quantum Lead instead of Quantum Leap. And is that a typo, or is that?
Yeah. Yeah, that is a typo. Typo.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I wanted to make sure.
You know, I was talking to somebody the other day and he said, I want to talk about, he said, yeah, that song Lead. He said, I said, what lead? He said, Lead. I said, there is no song called Lead. And then he probably meant quantum leap.
Quantum lead, yeah, whichever.
Lead or however you want to pronounce it. Yeah, I was looking at it thinking that's got to be a typo. Okay.
So do they spell it L-E-A-D?
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
Well, it's okay. Hopefully it's just in our promo material and not in the actual album, though. You may want to double check.
I have a CD copy right now in front of me. Quantum Leap. No, because we took care of the artwork. My guy took care of the artwork, so it's correct.
Okay.
With labels, you cannot trust them. They will always do something like that.
Yeah, I kind of figured. Yeah. You also got a bonus track, on here. I love the live tracks. I love that you have some Thin Lizzy Cold Sweat on there.
Oh, yeah. Because
I love Thin Lizzy. I love Thin Lizzy.
Me too, man.
Yeah.
It's a great track to play live, you know. It started as a jam thing on soundchecks, and then we're like, why not? Let's just do it. And I remember I did this tour a couple of years ago, and I was opening for Steel Panther, and the tour kicked off in Ireland. And when we played Cold Sweat in Ireland, it was like you played the national anthem. Everybody went apeshit, man. It was insane. Like, crowd went totally wild when we played it there.
And now, of course, too, we talk about speaking about playing live, and you played, of course, with John Norum, Ronnie Romero, and Dino Jelusic. I mean, that's a hell of a lineup right there.
It is, isn't it? I mean, wow, those guys, they're all amazing and great people and just amazing musicians, man. It was just, that was my first show like in a year and a half, so it was good to get back in style like that, next to these guys.
What does it feel like then, what were kind of the emotions going through your head, just prior to getting out on stage for the first time in 18 months?
I was really looking forward. I was like, okay, let's do it. I mean, I have to say I was a little bit rusty. I was not 100%, but, it happens. I haven't played in so long. It was great. It was great to just kind of like shake the dust off. It was just a great feeling. Because we were supposed to do the festival in August with Firewind in Holland, and that got canceled. And the same thing last summer, we were supposed to do like another festival. And I was looking forward to those two things both summers, like, okay, my one-off gig, and it never happened. So it was like the jinx broke us, like in a sense, like, okay, now we're finally back on stage. Now we're doing it.
Well, and I'm sure that, 90% of you is still better than 100% of 90% of the rest of the guitarists. So.
What's that?
90% of you is still probably better than 100% of 90% of the rest of the guitarists.
I don't know. But, I'm just saying that, it was just a feeling like, okay, I was not there like a... Because, also we only did one rehearsal, and that's another thing. Like you get used to, like, I became like a YouTube guitarist. I've been sitting down in my home studio playing and making videos, but I standing up and playing what you play when you're standing up with the guitar hanging low is a totally different thing, and of course the adrenaline of the show is a totally different world. But I'm glad we got back to it.
Mm-hmm. So then what have you got coming up, as far as live stuff goes? I see there's a couple of things around the end of October that are listed on your website right now.
Oh, that's just clinics. That's just clinics at a music school in Athens. If they don't close them by then, who knows? Mm. I mean, all they talk about here is, since school started that, the kids are giving COVID one another, and then that's spreading again, and they're talking about closing down again. So let's see, man. Greece is very strict maybe a bit more strict than it should be. So that's a couple of clinics. I mean, we have one festival with Firewind in Switzerland in November. And that's the only gig, really, because I it's no point really to book too many gigs right now when you don't know what's happening every couple of weeks.
Well, and I guess too, like the disappointment of booking something and then just having it be canceled, I think that would probably be pretty disheartening.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to avoid. So I prefer not to say yes to a lot of things instead of just, you know, yeah, let's confirm, let's do this and this and this, and then like canceling everything, because it really is disheartening. It happened already a couple of times now, and I don't really want to do that, you know, and it also feels weird. I don't want to be the guy that postpones a tour for like three times. We did that once on that Symphony X tour that we were supposed to do last year, and I just don't want to start postponing stuff. I don't want to do that. I'd rather just not confirm it.
Yeah, because again, I know we talked about, I think we even talked about that Symphony X tour, because I was looking forward to going to see that, and then it's like, it's canceled, and it's canceled.
Yeah, it was postponed once, and then the second time, well, I think, I don't remember what happened the second time around, but in the end, we had to pull out of the tour, because, I mean, first of all, we cannot get visas now, and secondly, even if we had the visas, I don't think we could still enter the U.S. So I think the U.S. is open now only for the local bands, or, you know, or the bands that are in the U.S. touring. So what's the point, you know? What's the point? I'm not even looking at returning to North America anytime soon, unless measures are lifted and all these restrictions. So that's one thing. And then it's like another thing also, like even within Europe, how can you travel from country to country and do a proper tour when you don't know what's happening every day, and different regulations in each country? So yeah,
it's a big fat mess, that's for sure.
It's weird. Yeah, it's weird. I mean, we might have to just do one-offs here and there for a while until things are a bit more clear.
So then when you went to AFM and said, hey, I've got you know, an all instrumental record for you. Like, how do they react? Is it like, ooh, awesome, Gus G has a new album for us? Is it kind of like that?
Well, they were a little bit skeptical with it, but they still allowed me to do it. You know, they were like, yeah, sure. You know, we'll give you the budget that we have, and you know, you can do it. And but they were skeptical as well, because they didn't know how it was going to work, and it's not something they really do either. You know. But we saw that from the past solo, the previous solo album that we did, like sort of like the most successful songs were the instrumentals, especially that song Force Majeure. It did really well on Spotify. And we thought, well, maybe, you know, the labels, you know, they're trying to protect their investment, I guess. So they thought maybe it'll do great, you know, but it's not a guarantee, you know. This is not like commercial music. So even within the genre, you know, it's just a thing that is primarily, you know, catered to musician world. But yeah, let's see. They were a little bit skeptical, but they were also they did not deny me to do that. You know, they wanted me to be happy, so they were like, yeah, we'll do it, we'll give it a shot, and let's see what happens. You know.
Let's get into the real question here, though, the one everybody wants to know. Just how difficult is it to name that many songs when you don't have vocals?
It is. It's very difficult.
Especially Chromosthesia. You know, like, I mean, it's like, where does that come in?
Well, that's out of frustration of not being able to find titles. So I started like Googling like weird words or like Googling like psychological terms or like sci-fi terms or whatever, like whatever. I don't know what I was looking for, but I was just Googling around stuff, and I found this chronesthesia word, or I was, I really don't remember what I was looking for. I was just looking for weird words somehow, maybe Greek words or just medical terms or whatever, and or science terms or something like that. And I think this came up because it's a term in psychology, and what chronesthesia means is the mind time travel. because we are, you know, as humans, we are able to time travel with our minds. Just like when we, when we think of some of our past experiences or where we've been, and we, you know, when we say, oh, I was literally like in that moment, like I was, you know what I mean? When you can feel like when you were in a certain moment or in a certain state of mind, whatever. And we can also, of course, we cannot predict the future, but we can kind of time travel with our mind to the future. Whereas sometimes, you know, how you picture how certain things could be like. It's kind of hard to explain, but you can Google it. So I thought it was a nice nice word, and it's Greek too, and I'm Greek. So I thought, yeah, this is a cool title. This should be on one of the tracks.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, you know, one of the things that we read is that you had originally intended to just to do everything yourself, but you actually wound up with a drummer. Yeah. Even though obviously your drumming looks amazing from the Fierce video, so.
You like that drum kit?
Yeah.
I picked it up at Toys R Us. It's amazing. It's a kid's drum kit.
So anyways, let's talk about the drums on the album then that are not
drums.
Yours. Yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I had programmed everything because I did everything actually. I played the bass, I programmed the drums, and I'm good at doing that because I've done that in my pre-productions for years and years. Since I was a kid, basically. So I know how to program drums pretty well and all that. So, but then this guy, Vincent Velasco, he hit me up and he said, hey, man, I saw you're doing an album. So, you know, he sent me a bunch of links and of his playing. And he said, if you need a drummer, you know, I'll be happy to, blah, blah. And I originally said, ah, thanks, man, but I think I'll just stick to my drum machine. because I was just so frustrated that, you know, I couldn't travel because I like to go to the studio whenever we track drums.
Mm.
I want to be there present because I produce the drums and all that. So I always choose like a nice studio with a big room and stuff. So I'm like, I don't want to just do like some, you know, in a like homemade recording of drums, you know, then that's just we're going to end up replacing all the natural sounds. I didn't want to do that. But then I was like, well, maybe I should give this guy a chance. And he had his own studio, actually. I think that's what changed everything. Not only he was a great player, but he had his own studio and he could engineer himself and all that. And, you know, he did a track for us and I sent it to Dennis, who was going to mix the album. And he said, yeah, you know, the sounds are good enough for me to work with that. And so, I asked him, you know, you can do the rest of the album if you want. And he was great, great guy to work with. Amazing, worked really fast and great player, just great player, you know. He's, I'm glad I decided to work with Vincent because it's just better when you have real drums, you know. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's really nothing quite like that
yeah,
sound.
Yeah. I just didn't want to be stuck in a situation where we would have a great drummer, but then the drum sound would be total shit. So we would have to replace it, and then it would sound like a drum machine. You know what I mean? That's mm-hmm. what I didn't want to end up with. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. One of the questions that I have is that, so what's it like playing guitars that are odd-shaped versus, say, like the standard Fender-shaped instruments?
Yeah, I mean, by now, it would be really weird for me to play anything else in the star shape. It's become like an extension of my body. I just that's the guitar that I play. It's kind of weird to say that, but I can play a Strat guitar like when I'm sitting down and all that Strat shape. But if I stand up, it'll feel weird, like to play an actual gig with a Strat style guitar or a Les Paul shape. You know, so I'm much more comfortable with that star shape.
How long did it take you to kind of get out of that, to get out of the normal guitar and into the star shape?
I think it started when I was first starting out with Dream Evil in Sweden, and I had got my first endorsement with Washburn Guitars.
and they gave me a Dimebag guitar, Dimebag Darrell, you know, and that was like the similar shape. And we went to tour Japan. I was very young. I was 21, 22, and we went to Japan. And that's when I met with the guys of ESP Guitars. And they approached me about making me a custom shop guitar. And I said, yeah, but what should we do? And they said, well, you're getting popular here in Japan, and this kind of shape is, you know, could be your trademark. So they handed me this star-shaped guitar, and I liked it, of course. And I thought, you know, I could continue with that. And it just felt natural, you know, since I picked it up. It really felt natural. It's not like I had to try hard. So, yeah, I guess it was kind of like a meant-to-be kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and now, of course, you're with Jackson Guitars. You've got the Blackfire pickups. I mean, you're branching out a lot into the technology side, it looks like.
Yeah, I'm getting more and more into it. You know, starting a pickup company was also one of those things that I got to do during the pandemic. You know, if I was on tour nonstop, I wouldn't have been able to launch, you know, my new venture, you know, Blackfire Pickup. So that's one of the things, the positive outcomes of all this lockdown situation. I was able to spend time and work on that. Yeah, it's a new effort for me. It's a new thing. I'm really into, because I've been designing guitars for years with these companies. It's nice for me to work on new projects like that on the side, you know, aside from making music, because this is an extension of what I do, you know. It really is a blessing, you know, when you get to work so closely. Or nowadays, of course, you know, having my own company, and now I can do whatever I like, basically. So it's great.
Well, you know, that's the interesting thing to me, is that, I mean, the electric guitar has been around for so many years that to find new ways to kind of innovate within the electric guitar, it doesn't sound easy to me.
It's not, you know, a lot of things have been done. I think the newest innovations are all these 8-string guitars that the Gent guys are playing and all that. I mean, that's a pretty new thing and pretty exciting for a lot of the players. To me, the guitar sounds better with 6 strings. So, you know, on one hand, you have these limitations of what it is, and then you can do so many. On the other hand, you can do so many variations based on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. We've talked to a lot of guitarists, including like people that are, you know, creating different guitars and that kind of thing. And it's fascinating. It's like everything we think of is typically a 6-string guitar, but now 7, 8 strings. I mean, wow. It's just,
yeah.
It seems limitless now.
The guitars come, it is. And, you know, it has come a long way where I think where like the real progress has been made is like on more affordable instruments. I mean, nowadays you can get really well-made instruments that are, you know, ergonomically well-designed and, you know, really, really good quality for their money. Whereas like 20 years ago, that didn't exist as much. And that's what I like about that. Like when we come up with a new model with Jackson, you know, you get like all those import models. And they're really great, you know. That's like $800 or $1,000 guitar, and they're just really great for their money, you know. That probably back in the day, that would have been like a $2,000 or $3,000 guitar.
Wow.
Is there any instrumental albums that you consider to be essential for people to listen to?
Besides, of course, yes.
This one.
Yeah. Yes, of course. Yeah, my album. That's the one. Yeah. That's
number one, right there. Yeah.
Number one album if you want to get into instrumental guitar, Quantum Leap, of course. I think definitely, you know, the classics by Satriani, you know, Surfing with the Alien, The Extremist, definitely albums like that, or Passion Warfare and Alien Love Secrets from Steve Vai, and, you know, Rising Force, Yngwie. You know, a lot of the, what else, like some of the Mike Varney, 80s shred stuff. But, you know, even more modern guys, you know, like Angel Vivaldi has made great albums. Sandy James, you know, newer guys, you know, that they're amazing. You know, they're and they're taking guitar to next levels as well. Yeah.
Do you find that you listen to the newer guys, or do you find that you kind of more listen to the older guys?
No, I mean, I listen to what's out there, you know, and a lot of these guys are friends of mine, you know. For example, I just mentioned Andy and Angel, you know, these guys are, you know, we kind of like have similar paths in that sense, you know. We've done tours together and collaborations, and yeah, I mean, I'm really inspired by guys like them.
So then, you know, kind of back to the album again, like, you've got 3 videos. Do you think that you'll do more videos?
Oh, I've already shot like 6 videos.
Okay then.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We have done that already. I mean, it's just a matter of time before they drop.
Wow. So you're very busy with this album, obviously.
Well, that's the thing. I knew that I wasn't going to go on a world tour. So I was like, well, maybe I should try and do a video for each track. I haven't managed to do that yet, but there's time. We can maybe do some more. But we've filmed 6 videos so far. So, yeah, there's definitely more content coming out. I'm toying around with the idea to do like a live stream concert, but not like a full production thing, kind of more like a live from the rehearsal room kind of thing, but with a nice sound, nice mix, you know. That's one of the ideas that I'm you know, we're discussing here right now. Hopefully we can do that.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, it's just keeping yourself, well, and keeping the album front and center for people, for sure, because I mean, you don't want it to get lost in the shuffle right now, especially with you not being able to go out and tour live.
Yeah, that's one thing. And secondly, you know, I don't really think that AFM are gonna put all their money into, you know, buying me billboards for this album.
They should.
But you know, I don't look at it that way. I just look at it as, you know, I'm just there in my corner and I do my little thing, you know, for the people that follow me and support me. And at the end of the day, that's all that matters. You know, just connecting with your own fan base and, you know, your own kind of circle of supporters, whoever it is, and engaging with them. To me, that's more important than just, you know, trying to have the best marketing out there. You know what I mean? It's like, the medium has changed so much, you know. It's I think it's more important to have your own, you know, you can reach your own people through social media. So that's like, you know, the core fan base there. That's the people that support you. That's the people that come back to your page every day. Of course, you want to expand that and do press and do marketing and all those things. But it's changed a lot. I don't know what you guys think. I mean, look how far podcasts have come, for example.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's for sure.
What people used to think of podcasts 10 years ago, and now everybody's starting one. That's the big thing now, you know? So. Mm-hmm.
We started this 10 years ago, so trust me, I know.
So you definitely know what I'm talking about. And I remember, like, my A&R at Century Media telling me this, like, 12 years ago, like, dude, like, all of this stuff is going to go away. Because I was like, what do you mean? I should be, like, on like, late-night TV shows and playing. He's like, no. He said, you know, at the end of the day, like, you want to have that, I don't know, 5,000, 10,000, 15,000 fans, however many you have. You want to have your community together, and like, there's going to be all these platforms that you can go there and just keep in touch with them. And like, basically, you know, basically connect with them right there. And that seemed like such a wrong thing to hear back then. But now it's, that is what it's about, what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess.
Because, I mean, so many records are being released every day. So many things are happening. So many videos drop on YouTube. Like, you know, speaking of getting lost out there, like, how can you not get lost out there with whatever's being dropped every day or every second?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, it's best to cultivate, you know, what you actually have. And, you know, and I think eventually that will grow and pick up more steam anyways. But, but you know, keep what you have, and you know, because that is very important.
Yeah, I think like your main audience, and of course, you know, the whole, you know, growing organically, that's what it's about. To me, that's the essence of the whole thing, and that's what's the most important thing. And I mean, essentially, without the audience that you have, without them, you can't really do anything, really. I mean, all this stuff means nothing. All the videos, all the music, all the art you put out.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're basically out of time. I do want to ask, you know, how the response has been from your core fans so far to the new album.
Yeah, the three singles that we put out, they seem to really like it so far. So that's a great thing. Yeah. I think a lot of the people probably wanted me to do more of this kind of instrumental stuff for years. So yeah, I guess here it is now.
Well, because you know, I don't know if you know this, but you're pretty good at playing the guitar. So like, don't let it go to your head. But I think you got a future in this business.
Thanks. I'll think about it.
Well, Gus, we thank you so much for coming on the show again. It's always a pleasure, and we want to give you the chance to tell everybody where they can keep up with you, where they can find Quantum Leap and Blackfire Pickups, everything you want to plug right now.
All right, cool. Here we go.
I'll sit back.
Well, first of all, my website is GusGOfficial.com, and you know, my social media is pretty much GusGOfficial, Instagram and Twitter. I think the Facebook page is the opposite, Official Gus G. I don't know why, but it was like, yeah. And then, yeah, if anybody wants to upgrade their tone and get kick-ass pickups, they can check out blackfirepickups.com. I'm not kidding. They really will make a difference. So, yeah. But anyways, that's about it, really, man. Thank you guys for having me on the show again. It's a pleasure. And
not a problem.
Well, the pleasure's always ours. I mean, you're awesome, awesome to talk to, and the new album Quantum Leap is fantastic. There's so much to hear.
October 8th, right?
Yeah.
Is it October 8th that it drops?
What's that?
October 8th is the day it drops.
October 8th, yes, digital and physical, and vinyl is going to come out November 26th because there's so much demand that all vinyl factories are pushing all those releases. They're delaying everything, so unfortunately, they want to get their hands on the vinyl. It'll have to be a few weeks later, but yeah, primarily October 8th on all digital platforms everywhere, you know, to stream and all that, and the CD, of course, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for your time. You know, remember us for next time. Remember, I'm Martin the dumb one. He's Brett the ugly one. I'd rather be dumb.
Oh, man, you guys are funny. Thank you again, man. Have a good one.
Thanks a lot, Gus. We will talk to you later for sure.
Yeah. Take it easy.
All right, bye-bye. All the best. Bye now.
Bye-bye.